ॐ अग्निर्मिलन्दस्य जनाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदमयं ददति स पदन्तिकम् वंशकपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. In this next to last chapter of the third canto, Kapila Muni, after describing so many horrible, horrific sufferings that accrue to the living entity who is performing sinful activities, he's now, in this chapter, describing alternative paths, different ways that we can act within this material world. And by acting in different ways, as one would expect, one gets different results. It is not that every way everyone does whatever they want, and everyone, when they die, their wings grow out of their back and they flap their way to heaven. Everyone, it doesn't work like that. Everyone, of course, sees himself as acting very good and very nicely. But actually, different people, according to how they act, but not by their own judgment, because everyone rationalizes. No one quite acts rationally, but everyone rationalizes and thinks that what I do is perfect or very good. And why is it perfect? Basically because I've done it. Because I have done it, and because in my own particular web of reasoning, it was the only thing I could have possibly done. Therefore, it is good. It is perfect. Ishwaraham mambogi siddham. Siddham means I am perfect. Everyone basically thinks like that, with part of their mind. But part of their mind knows that obviously something is lacking with that way of thinking. So in any case, previously we've heard how the soul who acts impiously or improperly, sinfully, just to maintain his family, just to take care of himself, oh, how he suffers in his life and when he leaves his body. Practically speaking, there is nothing but suffering for him. Although he is thinking, I am perfect and I am happy, his life is actually full of so much suffering. You ask people if they're suffering, they say, no, I'm not. But they're drinking, they're fearful all the time, they're taking this intoxicant, that intoxicant, they're not satisfied with what they have. One of the basic principles of happiness is satisfaction. Without satisfaction, how could one be peaceful? And without peace, how can there be happiness? If one's mind and heart are always disturbed, how can one claim that he's happy? And yet, everyone is in that condition. Actually, when we walk down the street, just look at people's faces when they don't know you're looking at them. And you just see how the anxiety just comes through. What are they anxious about? What are they worried about? They have hundreds and thousands of things to worry about. Basically, they have desires, material desires. And the basic fear is that I won't get what I desire, and something other than what I desire will come to me. So in this world where everyone must get old, and everyone must get diseased, and everyone must die, and no one wants to get old, and no one wants to get diseased, and no one wants to die, so of course everyone is in anxiety. If for no other reason, those basic, fundamental, devouring elements of just living in the material world fills everyone with anxiety. And no one knows what's going to happen when it's time to leave this world. people talk about death. People usually don't talk about death. There's things, two things that people don't talk about: how much money they have in the bank and death. Those things are kept very carefully in the, around the side corner. People don't talk about these things because no one knows and everyone is afraid. Ultimately, everyone is afraid. So, a person who acts sinfully in this life against the principles of scriptures, of shastra, of morality, and just does whatever he feels is required, he has to suffer so much. And then we've heard also in this 32nd chapter of not the people who act sinfully, but we've heard of two different types of activities other than the ones who act sinfully. Basically, we're going to hear a progression here, somewhat of progression, of karma, jnana, and yoga. And then finally, Kapila Muni is going to recommend bhakti. So we heard of someone acting piously according to the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. He's acting piously in a very, very good way. He does at least one good deed daily. He performs sacrifices. But what is the reasoning? What is his motive? It's so that he gets so much more back. He's interested in selfish pleasure, just like a sinful person. But he knows that if I act badly, then bad things happen to me. And if I act good and piously and purely and generously, then I feel happy. It's such a difficult to accept principle in this world that the more we give, everyone is feeling a lack inside themselves. And no one feels they have enough. This is the very nature of the mode of passion. And rather than... And the tendency, of course, is to be miserly in this world, to hoard more and more because we never feel like we have enough and we're always afraid. But the more we give, actually, the more we give, the happier we become. And that's for the present and for the future. So there's that old saying, it is more pleasant to give than to receive, and it's a fact. Gives one more pleasure to the heart. So that is because it is pious. Pious means basically in the mode of goodness. So one can enjoy more in this world rather than by acting sinfully and improperly. One can, and greedily and selfishly, one can enjoy more in this world by acting in a pious way, in a giving way, in a generous way. So we heard about those type of people, but yet, because ultimately they're self-interested, they ultimately, although being happy in this world in one sense, they have to suffer also because it's self-interested. And Kapila Muni, ultimately, practically speaking, the thing that he wants to tell us is that we have to give up all self-interested activities and start acting, instead of for the pleasure of myself, start acting for the pleasure of Krishna. And the example given earlier is that when you put food in the mouth, when the fingers put food in the mouth, the proper way for the fingers automatically attain nourishment. And if the fingers try to eat the food by themselves, they're never happy. Or if we want to the leaves of the tree to be watered and properly nourished, we water the root. So similarly, Krishna is the root of existence, the root of our existence and the root of all existence. This is what it means, janmadyasya yataha, that everything proceeds or comes from the Lord, that He is the source of everything. So if we will just try to satisfy Him with devotion, with our full heart, then we are perfect, actually, and we will go to the eternal abode. So that's Krishna's bringing us to that point. That's what His desire is, for our benefit. So he's going through to bring us to that conclusion. He's telling us the different ways that we can act in this world and what the different results are. So a person who acts selfishly but impiously suffers. The perfect person who acts selfishly but piously, generously, performing sacrifices, he enjoys for some time, but he also one day must die because ultimately he's acting selfishly, he's in the material world. And then we also heard in text 5 through 7 yesterday about acting not in a attached way, but acting in a detached way, just acting not to get something for oneself, but acting just because it's one's duty to act. This in Sanskrit is called nishkam karma. There's two different levels of nishkam karma. One is just being detached from the fruit of one's work and just working very dutifully. This is basically dutiful action. I do it. Why? Because it is what is supposed to be done. I have a job and I do it. Why? Because it's supposed to be done properly. That's duty, just detached work. And that gradually will elevate one in consciousness. But there's also another type of detached work that's even more wonderful than that. And that type of detached work is one is detached from the fruit of one's work, and one takes that fruit of one's work, one acts dutifully, does one's work. Yatta pravitabhutanam yena savamidam tatam. One does one's work and then gives the fruit to Krishna. And that will bring one gradually on the path of full bhakti. So these two, karma and nishkam karma, have been described. And then, that's where we left off yesterday. Then we begin in text 8. Now text 8, 9, and 10 describe, so we heard karma and then like jnana. This nishkam karma is sort of like knowledge applied to work, detachment. And then text 8, 9, and 10 describe yoga. Worshippers of the Hiranyagarbha expansion of the personality of Godhead remain within this material world until the end of two paradhas, when Lord Brahma also dies. After experiencing the inhabitable time of the three modes of material nature, known as two paradhas, Lord Brahma closes the material universe, which is covered by layers of earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, ego, etc., and goes back to Godhead. So this is the yogis, talking about the yogis who focus their mind on the supersoul, the Hiranyagarbha. There are three supersouls in the universe. The soul of the entire existence, who is known as Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu. Then there's the soul of each universe, Kabadakshaya Vishnu. And the soul within each and every living entity called Chiradakshaya Vishnu, the supersoul. So by focusing through yoga, by meditating, concentrating, focusing on the supersoul of existence, this is what happens. The yogis who become detached from the material world by practice of breathing exercises and control of the mind reach the planet of Brahma, the topmost planet in the material universe, which is far, far away. So this is what happens to yogis. They go to the planet of Brahma. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma, and therefore when Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. So there are two kinds of yogis like this who are focusing on the supersoul. You can even say three kinds. The practices of Patanjali Yoga, if they are following what Patanjali said, they merge within the body of the Lord. They know of the Lord's eternal form and they merge within His body. Then there are those yogis who meditate on the supersoul but want to go to Brahman. And then there are those yogis who meditate on the supersoul and want to go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So each yayatamam prapadyante, each will get according to their desires, but they will all leave the material world. Prabhupada explains in his purport, by perfecting their yogic practice, yogis can reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka or Satyaloka. And after giving up their material bodies, they can enter into the body of Lord Brahma. Because they are not directly devotees of the Lord, They cannot get liberation directly. They have to wait until Brahma is liberated, and only then, along with Brahma, are they also liberated. It is clear that as long as a living entity is a worshipper of a particular demigod, his consciousness is absorbed in thought of that demigod, and therefore he cannot get direct liberation or entrance into the kingdom of God. Nor can he merge into the impersonal effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such yogis or demigod worshippers are subjected to the chance of taking birth again when there is again creation. Therefore, so karma, jnana, yoga. Therefore, my dear mother, Kapila Muni says, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart. So don't perform, be in the mood of jnana or karma or yoga. Be in the mood of bhakti. Aham tam sarvabhutanam ritpadmeshu kritayalayam. Sutanuhavam sharanam. Sharanam means you surrender. Take his shelter. Take shelter of the Lord. Braja bhavena bhamani. And take his shelter by devotional service with bhav, with great loving devotion. Now he's going to explain this even more clearly. This is ultimately the path that Kapila Muni is recommending. We should give our hearts completely to Krishna in great, great bhuta bhavena bharata, with great devotion. We should act however we're acting, but with great devotion, thinking, let Krishna be pleased with what I do. Let me offer this to him. This is Bhagavad Dharma. Whatever position we're in, and we're all individuals, we have our own situations, we have our own natures, characteristics, ages, everything different. But if we are similar, or we have commonality on this one point of let me please Krishna, then we are practicing actual religion. And that is the common point of all religion, and that is what all living entities actually have in common, that is our true dharma, that is what sustains the soul, loving service to Krishna, to God, to the Supreme Lord. Let him be pleased. Let me act to please him. So Prabhupada explains in his purport. One can attain direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not step by step by step by step, as if we're practicing karma, jnana, or yoga, but direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness, and revive one's eternal relationship with him as lover, as supreme soul, as son, as friend, or master, as master. One can reestablish a transcendental loving relationship with the Supreme Lord in so many ways. And that feeling of love for Krishna is true oneness. The oneness of the Mayavadi philosophers and the oneness of the Vaishnava philosophers are different. The Mayavadi and Vaishnava philosophers both want to merge into the Supreme. But the Vaishnavas do not lose their identity. We remain individuals. They want to keep the identity of lover, parent, friend, or servant. In the transcendental world, the servant and master are one with in desire. Kutosto, as Bhagavad Gita says, the servant and master are one. They are on the absolute. That is the absolute platform. Although the relationship is servant and master, both the servant and the served stand on the same platform. That is oneness. Lord Kapila advises his mother that she did not need any indirect process. She was already situated in that direct process because the Supreme Lord had taken birth as her son. Actually, she did not need any further instruction because she was already in the perfectional stage, because she loved her son, who is the Lord. She loved the Lord as her son. So Kapila Dev advised her to continue in the same way. He therefore addressed his mother as Bhamini to indicate that she was already thinking of the Lord as her son. Devahuti is advised by Lord Kapila to take directly to devotional service, Krishna consciousness, Because without that consciousness, one cannot become liberated from the clutches of Maya, the clutches of Maya, clutches of birth, death, old age, and disease. To be freed from that, one needs to be released from the realm of Maya, of illusion, and that can be done only by Krishna. So Kapila Muni continues, "My dear mother, someone may worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a special self-interest. But even demigods such as Lord Brahma, great sages such as Sanat Kumar, and great munis such as Marichi have to come back to the material world again at the time of creation. When the interaction of the three modes of material nature begins, Brahma, who is the creator of this cosmic manifestation, and who is full of Vedic knowledge, and the great sages who are the authors of the spiritual path, and the yoga system, they come back under the influence of the time factor. They are liberated by their non-fruitive activities and they attain the first incarnation of the Purusha." So even again that point of acting in a non-fruitive way, in a dutiful way, or a yogic way, one can attain the Purusha or the Supersoul. But at the time of creation, they come back in exactly the same form and positions as they had previously. So he's making the point, Kapila Muni is making the point, that if we act in so many different ways, whether it's karma, in a pious way, or full of knowledge, or meditation on the Supersoul, because there's a difference between meditation on the Supersoul and serving the Supersoul. So unless our mood is service, devotional service to Krishna, we will be forced to come back to take birth in the material world. And that really should be avoided. It's in our own interest to avoid that. So even if one goes up to Karanadakshaya Vishnu or like that, or the Supersoul, Paramatma, then one still has to come back until one perfects his service. So we'll read some of the purport about halfway through. The specific significance of his coming back, this is talking about even Brahma has to come back, may be noted. Brahma and the great rishis and the great master of yoga, Shiva, are not ordinary living entities. They are very powerful and have all the perfections of mystic yoga. But still they have an inclination to try to become one with the Supreme, and therefore they have to come back. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is accepted that as long as one thinks that he is equal with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is not completely purified or knowledgeable. In spite of going up to the first Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, after the dissolution of the material creation, such personalities again fall down or come back to the material creation. It is a great fall down on the part of the impersonalist to think that the Supreme Lord appears within a material body and that one should therefore not meditate upon the form of the Supreme, but should meditate again instead on the formless. Because people generally don't know the primacy or that Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Gajami, that Krishna is the origin, the Supreme Lord, and that the Supreme, the ultimate, has form, is a person. They tend to be impersonalists. And that means they tend to think ultimately that they are equal to the Supreme Lord and that they should merge with the Supreme Lord. And such people, This is an impurity within the heart, the less snare, the less trap of Maya, that we think that we are one with the Lord. So for this particular mistake, even the great mystic yogis or great stalwart transcendentalists also come back again when there is creation. All living entities other than the impersonalists and monists can take directly to devotional service and full Krishna consciousness and become liberated by developing transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this impersonalism, to think that we are one with God is the greatest of all diseases, conceptual diseases. It is worse than being attached to material sense enjoyment. Not that we should become attached to material sense enjoyment, because that's dukkha yona yevate, the source of misery. But it is more difficult to give up the tendency to want to become one with God, to think that the Supreme is impersonal, formless, and that ultimately we become what we lose our individuality and merge. It is more difficult to give up that than to give up the deepest desires for material sensual enjoyment. So therefore, everyone else can take to devotional service directly, but those who are impersonalists, very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. So Rupa Goswami actually describes this in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion. So we have to become convinced very strongly about this point, very strongly about this point, that ultimately beyond Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, Krishna says that I am the Pratishta, the platform on which Brahman, the impersonal, rests. It is not that the Supreme is impersonal, but because we can't understand the impersonal, he takes on a form when he comes to this material world. Almost all religious faiths think like this, because they don't have knowledge about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is very unfortunate. They can't help but thinking like this practically, because they think God is unlimited. So how could something unlimited have form? Because form appears to be a limitation. They think like this, but do not know about the transcendental, beyond limitation form of the Lord. And to say that Krishna cannot have form, that's placing limitations on him. Because I can't be unlimited and have a form, therefore Krishna can't be unlimited and have a form. But no, Krishna is unlimited, but yet he has a transcendentally inconceivable, all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent form. This is wonderful. This is achintya. This is inconceivable. This is Krishna's inconceivable power. And if he didn't have inconceivable power to do inconceivable things, what would be the meaning of him being God? We expect God to be kept within our finite brains, teeny finite brains. So we are individuals. This is called sambandha jnana. And we have to get this clear and straight, that we are individuals and Krishna is an individual. He is great. We are tiny, but we are individuals. We are part and parcel of Krishna. Parcels, individual units. And he is a great unit. He is a person. He has characteristics. He likes to do things. He doesn't like to do other things. He doesn't play the trombone or the bassoon. He plays the flute. He doesn't play the bass guitar. He doesn't play keyboards even. Although he could if he wanted to. But he plays the flute. And he likes to walk through Braja, the land of Braja, without shoes on. Like a village boy. And he likes to take care of the transcendental cows of Vrindavan. Why? His skin color is like the color of a bluish color, like a monsoon cloud, or the color of a tamal tree that is very effulgent. And he's very beautiful, all attractively beautiful. This is Krishna. He is like this. And he's attracted to the love of his devotees. He becomes captivated by the love of his devotees. He's not impersonal. He has qualities. He's not nirgun. He's not qualityless. He has qualities. And he becomes captivated by his devotees. The love of his devotees who give their heart to him. And he's trying to elevate all the souls in this world to become his devotee so that they can enjoy life, eternal life with him in the spiritual world. So we should get away from material addictions, attractions and addictions. Why? Because if we want to enjoy the material world, we have to stay in the material world to enjoy it, and we can't go there to Krishna. And we must, if we want to go to Krishna, get away from this concept that ultimately God has no form and qualities and personality. If he has no qualities, he has no mercy. If he has no quality, he has no compassion. If he has no qualities and he has no ears, no form, he has no ears, that means when we offer him prayers, he can't hear because he doesn't have the quality of being able to hear because he has no qualities. And he can't understand because if he has the quality to be able to understand, he has a quality, then he has no qualities. What to speak of reciprocating with us and benedicting us, because if he has no qualities, how can he benedict us? Otherwise he would have the quality of benedicting. So very miserable concept of God. It's impersonal, so we should uproot it from the heart. Not only because it's better, it's because everywhere the Shastra will say this, that the Supreme Lord is a person, the Supreme Person, but not a person like us, but not completely different from us either. We are like a reflection of his perfect personhood. So Krishna, Kapila Muni, is trying to break these attachments, the material attachment to enjoying, because it will bring us misery, even if we do it in a pious way. Ultimately it's temporary, and everything temporary causes misery. Adyantavantahantaya natesu ramate buddha. A wise person doesn't touch things that pleasures have a beginning and an end, because he knows that he will become attached to them, and then when they end, he will suffer. So Krishna wants to break these things. Therefore in 16, persons who are too addicted to this material world execute their prescribed duties very nicely with great faith. We heard about these people. They daily perform all such prescribed duties with attachment to the fruit of results. Such persons, impelled by the mode of passion, I want, desire, are full of anxieties and always aspire for sense gratification due to uncontrolled senses. They worship the forefathers in a busy day and night, improving the economic condition of their families, social or national life. Such persons are called trivargika because they are interested in the three elevating processes. It's the karma jnana yoga. They are adverse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give relief to the conditioned souls. They are not interested in the Supreme Personality's pastimes, which are worth hearing because of his transcendental prowess. The second paragraph of this purport by Prabhupada. So people who are materialistic means selfish, and are performing their activities, whether it be karma, jnana, or yoga, motivated by selfishness, they really don't want to hear about the glories of Krishna. Because what does that have to do with their selfishness? They don't want to hear Krishna glorified. So Prabhupada explains, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is here described as Hari Medha, or he who can deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. Materialistic persons are never interested in hearing about the marvelous pastimes of the Lord. They think that they are fiction and stories, and that the supreme Godhead is also a man of material nature. They are not fit for advancing in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Such materialistic persons are interested in newspaper stories, novels, and imaginary dramas. The factual activities of the Lord, such as Lord Krishna's acting on the battle of Kurukshetra, or the activities of the Pandavas, or the Lord's activities in Vrindavan or Dwarka, are related in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which are full of activities of the Lord. But materialistic persons who engage in elevating their position in the material world are not interested in such activities of the Lord. They may be interested in the activities of a great politician or a great rich man of this world, but they are not interested in the transcendental activities of the Lord. So there is a Krishna Bhule se jivanadiya bahimuk. There's a turning the back, an aversion to Krishna and his glories deep within the heart of the living entity. Deeply embedded. And the medicine to keep hearing and chanting. And the taste comes. Such persons, text 19, are condemned by the supreme order of the Lord because they are averse to the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are compared to stool-eating hogs. They give up hearing the transcendental activities of the Lord and indulge in hearing of the abominable activities of materialistic persons. Purport. Everyone is addicted to hearing of the activities of another person, whether a politician or a rich man or an imaginary character whose activities are created in a novel. There are so many nonsensical literatures, stories, and books of speculative philosophy. Materialistic persons are very interested in reading such literatures. But when they are presented with genuine books of knowledge, like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu Purana, or other scriptures of the world, such as the Bible and Quran, they are not interested. These persons are condemned by the supreme order as much as a hog is condemned. The hog is interested in eating stool. If the hog is offered some nice preparation made of condensed milk or ghee, he won't like it. He would prefer obnoxious, bad-smelling stool, which he finds very relishable. Materialistic persons are considered condemned because they are interested in hellish activities and not in transcendental activities. The message of the Lord's activities is nectar, and beside that message, any information in which we may be interested is actually hellish. So materialistic persons, the verses continue saying, those who act with faith and scripturally, but selfishly, such materialistic persons are allowed to go to the planet called Pitriloka by the southern course of the sun, but they again come back to this planet and take birth in their own families, beginning again the same fruit of activities from birth to the end of life. When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they fall down by higher arrangement and again come back to this planet. Just as a person raised to a high position sometimes all of a sudden falls, kicked out of office. So the conclusion is that we should go somewhere. Abrahma Bhuvano Loka Puna Avatunarjan. We should go somewhere where we won't fall down, where we won't die, where we won't get old and suffer this and that, and there's no GST there. There's nothing, there's only eternity, bliss, and knowledge. That is where we should go, and everything is in relationship with Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is telling us, don't do anything temporary, don't merge with the Supreme, but come to me. And therefore, in text 22, he says, my dear mother, tasmad tam, therefore, tam, you, Devahuti, sarva bhavena, with loving ecstasy, Bhajaspa Parameshtinam, you should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When that worship is done, priti purvakam, with great devotion and affection, it is so effective. Tad gunasrayaya bhaktya. That means that you should worship him with bhakti, bhaktya, devotional service, bhajaniya padambuja, and by worshipping his worshipable lotus feet. To become a devotee. That's what Kapila Muni is telling his mother to do. Don't take to these other paths. I've mentioned these other paths, but that's not what I want you to do. Come to the essence. You worship me with great devotion. Worship the Lord with great ecstasy and devotion. Happiness in doing it. And then when one does that, Krishna reciprocates in such a wonderful way. What I thought of doing, now instead of reading the purport, we'll continue this. We're getting this probably in the next class or so. Maybe we'll take two classes. We'll finish this chapter and if Krishna allows, by the end of next week, three more classes, we'll finish the third canto. But just I would like to read something from Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is a wonderful book by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And most of the time that describes the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it describes in more detail the early pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before he took sannyas. Things that we don't hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Most of the time, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though he was Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he never would allow himself to be called God or Vishnu. But especially in his early pastimes, he demonstrated the mood of the Supreme Lord. Because that wasn't exactly his purpose in coming to this world. He came to rather taste the sweetness of being a devotee. Because that's one thing the Lord cannot taste directly, what it feels like to be a devotee of the Lord. So he came, the Krishna came in the mood of Srimati Radharani to taste that. Radha Bhava Dhuti Suvalalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. He came to taste that sweetness. But in the early days, especially when he just started the Sankirtan movement, in the house of Srivas Thakur, he demonstrated many times that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there was one time when for 21 hours he sat on the Singhasan, on the seat of Vishnu, and he called all the devotees, and everyone was so ecstatic, and he turned Srivas Thakur's house into the spiritual world, practically speaking. And he called all the devotees up, one by one practically, and whatever you want, whatever your desires are, he fulfilled them. And then he called some of the devotees and he told them things that no one knew, only that they knew. And then he benedicted them. So I would like to read, just to give us a little more idea of how Krishna deals with his devotees, I would like to read something about how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he said when he called up Haridas Thakur at this time when he was in the mood, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of the Lord. Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, an outcast family at those times. So after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Murari Gupta and completely satisfied him and brought him so much ecstasy, then we'll read. The Vaishnava devotees began to weep in ecstasy, chanting Krishna's name. Seeing how Lord Chaitanya showered his mercy upon Murari, anyone who hears the pastime of Lord Chaitanya's extraordinary magnanimity will receive love of Godhead. And that also there'll be a shutifal at the end of this, what I read. There'll be a benediction. So listen carefully. Womarari and Sridhar, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also, he benedicted Sridhar in this way, and Murari. While they cried in love of Godhead, being in front of the Lord, Lord Chaitanya chewed on betel nut with cracking loudness. Lord Chaitanya then turned his benevolent glance upon Haridas Thakur, and he called out, "Look at me, Haridas. Your body and birth is superior to mine, and your class and caste is more elevated than mine. Although that sinful Muslim tormentor has inflicted great pain on you because he was beaten," because Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family and he was chanting Hare Krishna, he was sentenced to be beaten in 21 marketplace, caned. They wanted to kill him. One marketplace, because there are always people in the marketplace, so they wanted to beat him in each marketplace so everyone would get the example. This is what happens if Muslims chant Hare Krishna. They're intending to sever the tormentors' heads. When your tormentors were trying to beat you to death, all along you were thinking of their well-being. You were unconcerned about your own pains. You had only compassion for them. And because of your merciful heart, I could not use force. My Sudarshan disc weapon was rendered impotent. I could not strike those men because you were determined to forgive them. And so I, unable to see your misery, protected you from their lashes by placing my own back upon your back. I accepted all those lashes myself that were meant for you on my back. Just see the marks on my back. I am not lying. Whatever other secondary reason there was from my descent. Unable to bear your sufferings, I hastened my advent to this world. My beloved Nada Advaitacharya fully recognized who you are. I am totally bound by his loving devotion. Our beloved Lord Chaitanya is very proficient in expanding the glories of his devotees. He will say or do anything to glorify and protect his devotees. He will even swallow fire for his devotees. And he will willingly become his devotee's slave. Lord Krishna recognizes only his devotees and knows nothing else. To Krishna, there is no one equal in position to his pure devotees. All those mean offenders who are antagonistic towards such pure devotees of the Lord are devoid of all good fortune. You can see from these pastimes the highly elevated position of the devotees and the things Lord Chaitanya said to Haridas Thakur. When Haridas heard about the Lord's magnanimous deed, how he had saved him, he fell swooning to the ground. He lost all external consciousness and was immersed in an ocean of ecstasy. This pastime has already been described earlier in Chaitanya Bhagavat. The Muslims, they were beating him, and Haridas was just chanting, and he wasn't feeling any pain because Mahaprabhu was taking it all. And the people, they were getting so tired, and they were exhausted. They were told by the magistrate to kill him. And they said, "Haridas, what's wrong? We're beating you. Everyone would have died by now. And what's going to happen to us? We're going to have beaten you, and you're not going to die, and then they're going to kill us because we weren't able to do our job." So Haridas said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And he said, "You should die." And he said, "All right." So he went unconscious into samadhi. And then they took him, and everyone could see that he was dead, and they took him and threw him in the Ganga, and they reported back and said he's dead. But actually he wasn't dead. But he was only thinking of their welfare. Incredible, incredible consciousness. And it so much touched Mahaprabhu that Mahaprabhu wouldn't even hurt those people who were hurting his devotee, because that would give pain to Haridas. When Haridas heard about the Lord's magnanimous deed, he fell swooning to the ground. He lost all external consciousness and was immersed in an ocean of ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya said, "Wake up, wake up, and see my opulent manifestation to your heart's content." Haridas awoke and became externally conscious, crying. He looked about, searching for the Lord's extraordinary manifestation. He rolled about all over the courtyard, sometimes breathing heavily and other times swooning. All the ecstatic symptoms swept over Haridas' body like a hurricane. And although the Lord tried to steady him, Haridas could not remain still. Thakur Haridas said, "O Lord Vishwambar, you are the Lord and protector of the universe. Now the responsibility of delivering a lowly fallen wretch like me rests upon you. My Lord, how can I describe your transcendental glories, as I do not possess any good qualifications? I'm sinful. I'm not even within the Vedic society. Just seeing me makes a person vulnerable to sin, and touching me makes one so contaminated that he must bathe immediately. How can I say anything about your divine pastimes? There is one fact that you yourself have stated. Anyone remembering your lotus feet, be he an insignificant and fallen as an insect, anyone who remembers your lotus feet is never forsaken by you. Whereas even a mighty king falls from grace if he disregards your lotus feet. I am incapable of remembering you, although I know you give shelter to the most impoverished soul if he simply remembers you. The evil Duryodhana and Dushasana drag the righteous Draupadi into the place of court wanting to disrobe her. Confronted with the danger of disgrace, she remembered you, Krishna. And because of this, you made her sorry endlessly long by your mystic potency. Yet, the evil doers could not perceive your hand in this. Once, the witches surrounded Parvati Devi, desirous of eating her. And when she remembered you, you immediately appeared and punished the witches and saved your devotee. I am so sinful that I cannot remember such a magnanimous personality as you, O Lord. Please, therefore, give me shelter at your lotus feet." The demon, Hiranyakashipu, inflicted all varieties of treachery and brutal methods trying to kill Prahlad, like poisoning him, hurling him down from a mountain, throwing him into a boiling cauldron of oil. Yet, throughout his tribulations, Prahlad meditated upon your lotus feet and was saved from each and every calamity. In this way, you humbled many of his enemies and took away all their vitality and strength. Finally, you appeared in person due to Prahlad's meditation. Once the five Pandavas were in a grave dilemma, fearing the wrath of Devasa Muni. But by remembering you, you appeared personally and saved them. You calmed Yudhisthira Maharaj with your assuring words, "See, I am already here. You just sit down and relax, and I will take care of Devasa Muni and his army of disciples." Only the shred of vegetable left stuck to the side of the pot after the Pandavas had eaten was taken by Lord Krishna, relishing the thought of coming to his devotee's aid. The sage with his disciples, meanwhile bathing in the river, suddenly felt full in the belly, like having eaten a sumptuous meal. Ashamed and tearful, they fled. The miraculous benefits of remembering your lotus feet was amply demonstrated by the Pandavas in this incident. The path of true devotion for everyone is to remember you. You perform your super excellent activities to rescue your devotees. The story of Ajamil is wonderful, of how from the most degraded state he remembered the Supreme Lord at the moment of death. He saw the Yamadutas coming to drag his soul to the nether regions of hell, and in fear, looking for shelter, he saw his son's innocent face and called out his name, "Narayan!" The holy name of the Supreme Lord. And this immediately reminded him of the Lord. As soon as his mind rested on the Lord, all his danger and distress disappeared. Only the elevated devotees of the Lord have easy access to the greatest spiritual treasure, which is the constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. This is not surprising. Oh Lord, I am such a destitute that I do not even possess the sweetness of your memory, and yet you have not forsaken me. Although I am unfit to see you, you are present before me in person. I am praying to you now for only one benediction. Lord Chaitanya replied, say all that you want to say. There is nothing that I do not want to give you. Haridas spoke to the Lord with folded hands. O Lord, I have known only misfortune, yet you give me so much hope. Just allow me to partake of the remnants of foodstuffs of your devotees that are totally surrendered to your lotus feet. Let this activity be my permanent and most prominent service life after life. My sinful birth and existence is miserable without remembering you. But now, please make my life successful by granting me the remnant of your servitors. I feel within my heart that I have committed a grave offense by asking of you to situate an elevated status of that of a Vaishnava, although I am grossly unfit. O Lord, my master, protector, and maintainer of the entire creation, I am spiritually lifeless. Therefore, kindly forgive my ignorance. O Lord Vishwambar, the beautiful son of Mother Sachi, you are my master, so be merciful to me and keep me as a dog in the house of a Vaishnava. Haridas Thakur was overwhelmed by feelings of ecstatic devotional emotions, and he repeatedly petitioned the Lord. His desire for humility and devotional service unfulfilled. Lord Chaitanya replied, listen, my dear Haridas, you are a highly elevated Vaishnava. If anyone spends a day in your service and association, or if you kindly speak to someone, even for a short time, that person certainly achieves me. There is no doubt about this. Whoever respects and serves you does so to me also, for I perpetually reside within you. As my servitor, your position is unique. You have therefore imprisoned me within your heart eternally. I bless you that since you are crowned already with a faultless character, I bless you that you will always continue to worship and serve me and my devotees without a single deviation or offense. A tumultuous sound of joy from the Vaishnavas greeted Lord Chaitanya's boon to Haridas Thakur. High birth, caste, fruit of activities, or wealth are worthless commodities to achieve love of Godhead. Only the intense loving desire for Krishna can bring one to the lotus feet of Krishna. A Vaishnava may take birth in any family, but he always is the most exalted personality. This is the spiritual verdict. The living proof is Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family. Yet what he saw and spiritually perceived is rarely experienced by even eminent personalities like Lord Brahma, etc. Only the most wretched sinner will discriminate a Vaishnava's caste, race, or nationality, and for so doing, he suffers the pangs of repeated birth in a lower species of life. One who hears this pastime of the Lord and Haridas with proper faith will certainly enjoy the fruit of Lord Krishna Prema. These words are not my concoction, but the bold declaration of all scriptures. One is sure to experience the bliss of devotional service to Lord Krishna if one hears the transcendental activities of the pure devotees of the Supreme Lord. All glories to Haridas Thakur, a giant amongst the Vaishnavas. Remembering him, one is freed from all sinful reactions. Devotees started talking about Haridas. Someone said, he is like Lord Brahma. Another observed, Prahlad has come again as Haridas. Haridas Thakur was in every respect a great and unalloyed devotee. He is an eternal servant of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva are always desiring in their hearts the transcendental company of Haridas Thakur. All the demigods feel the same urge to associate with Haridas, and Ganga Devi wishes to bathe Haridas in her waters. Such is Haridas Thakur's exalted position. Just seeing him relieves one from the bondage of material existence, what to speak of associating with him. Great stalwart devotees like Prahlad, who is the son of a demon, and Hanuman, who is a monkey, are considered exalted Vaishnavas. Similarly, Haridas Thakur, born in a low-caste non-Hindu family, is counted amongst the foremost Vaishnava devotees. Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kapila Muni ki jai. Devahuti ma ki jai. Okay. Nice, yeah? And then one after another, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorifies the devotees and tells them different things. Very wonderful. Okay, so we'll continue next Wednesday. And if Krishna allows, by the end of next week, we'll finish the third canto. Okay, so thank you very much.